track. The next mile, the brave sight to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, predator and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn the slave driver.
Welcome, listeners.
It's the black people of America. The real
to time for an awakening. On Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening, and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in the TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream or the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always hear interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening and interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, interesting program for our listening audience and interesting guests, activists and organizers of the Ujima People's Progress Party. Brother Brandon and Brother Namdi is here with us to tell us about the party and tell us about the upcoming Ujima People's Progress Party's statewide conference. Slated for Saturday, May 11th, 2019, in Baltimore, Maryland. We'll hear more about the party from Brother Namdi and Brother Brandon after we come back after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services. Representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 7:14 here in the city of Philadelphia. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm looking to, you know, speak to the brothers about the, you know, their upcoming convention and just the whole ideal of party formation and the need for us to come to this from an independent perspective. So I'm looking forward to our discussion in there.
You know, it... this is just an extension of some of the things we've been doing over the, I don't know, the past couple of years, showcasing some of these independent black parties that have started in different areas of the country, from the Universal African People's Organization down there in Ferguson or St. Louis area under Zaki Baruti. The Black Is Back Coalition has been on under the leadership of Omawalia Shetela. The Jackson Cooperative, formed by Kali Akuna and others that spawned Chokwe Lumumba and his son, Chokwe Antar Lumumba, the Black Coffee Party out of Louisiana area, the 1 million conscious black voters and contributors. And most recently, Brother Khalid Rahim of the New African Independent Party up there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, that we brought here to Philadelphia, Richard. This is just an extension of some of the things that have been going on. I'm happy to have Brother Brandon and Brother Namdi with us to talk with us about the statewide convention planned by the Ujima People's Progress Party down in Baltimore. The convention is slated for May 11th in the city of Baltimore, and we're happy to have both brothers with us this evening. Brother Brandon and Brother Namdi are with us on the line. Brother Brandon, Brother Namdi, how are you, sir?
Doing good, brother. Thank you so much.
All right. Doing great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I'm glad to have both of you men with us this evening. You know, before we kind of break into the nuts and bolts of the party and some of the things happening in Baltimore, let's talk about both of you men and the formation of what you're doing, because I think that's just as important as the party itself and trying to form the party, is bringing conscious brothers and sisters together to work together. You see a need in the community, a dire need, to work together to form an organization that's to the point now where it's moving forward in convention form to bring other people in. Talk about both you men, how you met, what made you do what you're doing. Just give a brief synopsis if you want to the listening audience. And either one can go first, Brother Brandon or Brother Nobby.
Certainly. I'll kick it off. I've been a organizer mostly in the Baltimore area since the early 90s. Started out as a campus activist. Was recruited into different study groups, the All African People's Revolutionary Party, the Uhuru Movement. Mm-hmm. Had a chance to kind of really develop a strong ideological background, lots of grounded community work. I was in St. Petersburg during the middle 90s when there was a rebellion there in St. Petersburg that many people may have remembered. And end up returning back to Maryland mid part of to 2000s to help reorganize a chapter here. Went on into 2009, 2010, where we started to have this discussion about, I guess right after Barack Obama was elected, and the kind of participation that African people had in voting for him, and the early excitement that some people had for him, and then to kind of watch him evolve into the kind of administrator of imperialism and white power and capitalism that other presidents had done before him. Mm-hmm. Was really informative, and it helped us to really say, you know what, we have to take this question on in a different way. And so we started to just kind of really understand what the laws were here about getting on the ballot, which are very restrictive in Maryland. In every state, you have to become really, you know, wise to what that game is, how to participate, how to really identify ourselves differently from other formations. We didn't want to be seen as the Black Democrats or the Black Greens, you know, no hostility necessarily to Black people in those particular parties. But we were clear that the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, represented white power. They represented imperialism. They were party of the capitalist ruling class. And there was no possible way that African people could find justice or solutions in those political parties. And so we've been working in different fronts, whether it's been activist-based, whether it's been education-based, advocacy-based, to kind of really kind of, you know, produce a line and a style that would help people understand us a little better. I think some people are really always caught up on the question of winning elections and running in elections. And we've come to really realize that the building of power is what really is necessary. Whether you win an election or not, if you have power, you can make things happen. Okay. And so, you know, we've been out here organizing, and hopefully Brandon can pick up because he was somebody who was recruited in that process.
Okay. Brother Brandon.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Thank you, brother. So for me, I remember it just like yesterday where I was coming home from a union job at a plastic extrusion plant. And I saw a sign on a pole that said, "We're not funded by big businesses, banks. We believe in people power." And it wasn't necessarily the words per se that picked up on me, which it was something that I saw first, but it was also the pictures of black and white that was calling for a people powered movement, the ideas around what we should be fighting for, and exactly the platform agenda that can be formed through disciplined struggle and also having a direction on exactly where we would like to be as a people, but more or less where we should be going if we're trying to develop something that is centered around human platforms and as well as beneficial to poor and working class black people as well. So working a union job and seeing that on a poll, I gave the number a call, and I haven't been activated until I started attending the Fannie Lou Hamer political education class, a class where we were talking about the 14 city council districts, the state legislative districts, what are their responsibilities, what are their demographics, who are they beholden to, and more importantly, how often can you talk about them, how often can you see them, and what are the conditions that never change after repeating that cyclical process. And knowing that there's a class that was named off of one of our civil rights icons, sentinel, leader, and great, as well being taught to me, and I'm also having questions of my own, I've just came to a sudden conclusion and deduced to my own reasoning that living in a predominant black city where the majority of populace is over 65%, we have black sheriff, a black prosecutor, a majority black city council, and black mayor, and the conditions of black people are putrid. So I looked at the teachings from what I've got from Fannie Lou Hamer Political Institute, and that day that I saw it on a poll coming from work, from the union job, and everything that I've thought I've known about independent politics or politics at all have had a total crash course. And from there, I thought it was important that I get activated and also learn how to serve the people from a grassroots perspective, but with also being with full honesty as a working class black man in America.
Brother Brandon, with Brother Namdi mentioning that he had some street organization experience, and you just being a working man until you got involved, is it difficult, or do you find it difficult in Baltimore City or in the maybe surrounding area to do street organizing, grassroots organizing of our people? Or how is that for you? And even Brother Nam, you can weigh in. How's the response from our people down there as far as grassroots organizing around independent black party?
Well, I thank you for asking that question. It's a great question too. Well, I would say at first it went through a series of ideas and emotions for myself. At first it was kind of a bittersweet kind of thing. Then it was oh man, this is exhausting. Then it came to, it was something beautiful but necessary to go through. And I'll stick with just the last part. The reason why I saw it as something beautiful, because I didn't see myself as being the solution into this equation where the ruggedness, the lack of political development, the economic disinvestment in my own political underdevelopment, even at this time and still being developed to this day, I knew that was more of an importance of what are you willing to engage in to show people, hey, I'm willing to earn your respect, then well, build on the trust that we can share. And in Baltimore, it's a lot of, you know, distrust and dishonesty, not necessarily amongst the people, but from the officials that distance themselves. So when you're using a platform such as electoral politics, it becomes a question of, well, where you been? And, you know, I get why I see you now because it's election season, or what you're going to do for me. And sometimes people shut the door on your face. Sometimes people don't answer the door. Sometimes people, you know, get upset, get angry, get frustrated. I liken my approach to the brothers on the corner, everyone you see out there that's really dealing with life struggles on the front line. And I say, you know what? I'm you and every one of my black brothers and sisters, because there isn't much that changes me from you but a paycheck, and that can be taken away. So what can I do, knowing that these conditions that plague us or besiege us all or beleaguer us all, I'm sorry, is actually putting us in a position where we thinking that when someone comes with something independent or we're looking forward to introducing a social economic justice platform, that is nothing more but a fool's gold or a Trojan horse to give you something else undesirable. But in reality, I'm really asking for your respect in building something that's a protracted struggle that's going to take a long time to formulate. But if we're doing it from a disciplined platform and a perspective from a pure movement, I think we'll love the beauty and knowing that what we're putting together is something that is not a de-solution thing, but a part of a solution, because we all contribute to different parts. And as a worker, as a black working class man, I see myself as contributing to a part of a solution. I have to connect to my brothers and sisters, no matter how hard or how tough it is. It's a duty that I look forward to, and getting the good and bad negative responses. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to follow up on that. So the question obviously is important, because I think we've seen a range of that. I think over time we've learned where our base of support is for the question. Brother Brandon mentioned that Baltimore has about a 65% black population. So you're talking about a meaty number of people who we consider to be our constituency. Maryland is also unique because it has about a 30% total black population, which makes it about the fifth highest percentage in the country of black people all concentrated in one state. So the potential as a state party is very viable. You know, we've also seen that most of our support comes from people who are working class, whether that's unemployed or barely employed. We've seen it from people who are young, usually under 40. Very, very strong support from black women as far as the process to become a registered party in supporting the leadership work that we've done. We've been confronted by, you know, stakeholders. You know, we obviously can't play the same game that the Democratic machine plays in the kind of relationships that they've built, but we've learned to kind of forge our own. I ran as an independent candidate in 2016 for city council. I actually live in the district where Freddie Gray lived and was murdered. And we put out a platform that really spoke to some of these questions. We didn't win, but we found that there was a lot of support. But also we realized that the base of our support aren't necessarily voters. And so, again, that process of understanding political power, economic power, is just as much a legitimate question for independent black political parties, because just because you win an election doesn't mean you win political power. And we don't want people to be confused about that. We're clear about it. And we're hoping that through our education process, people who come involved with us understand that building power is far more important than winning elections, you know, as far as moving our community forward.
Brother Nnamdi, Brother Brandon, I agree with you as far as building a structure, and it's not necessarily about winning and losing, especially at this point. So when you ran, Brother Nnamdi, a couple of years ago, did you run under the party banner, or you ran as an independent?
I had to run as an independent.
Okay.
The state of Maryland's laws are very restrictive. So I've had a conversation with Brother Raheem, and there's not that kind of flexibility to kind of put the party out there.
Okay.
But obviously, all our promotion let people know we were a part of the Ajima Party.
Okay, so you kind of had to run under the independent banner, even though you were a part of the Ujima Party.
That's correct.
Okay, all right. There's a lot of other things I wanted to mention, then I want to spin off into some of the planks and platforms. But Brother Richard, jump in.
Yeah, you know, one, as I always say, you know, for brothers like yourself, the putting in, you know, really putting in the work, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing. I wanted to, you know, kind of back up and get an audience your perspective in what it takes to two things I must want to start out with: what it takes to build a party, and the other thing that is was you both mentioned a couple of times that I think is important to define: what is power? What do we, when we go through this political formation process, when and we say we're, you know, our goal is for the acquisition of power, what are we really saying, you know, to break that out? But as you go through this party building process, what does it take, you know, for us to, you know, for party to be built, as you're engaged in this process?
So I'll tackle that then. So I think the question, and this is, I think, even universally, of course, you have the laws, and that's always something important to go through to understand what it takes to be on the ballot. And, you know, state of Maryland has rules about how long a political party can be on the ballot and all that. I think more important than that is helping to organize your infrastructure of your organization, right? Not just a platform, but how your political education looks. What type of activities do you engage in? I think for people to be quite honest about what politics is, and which is not what we get educated to understand about politics. Generally speaking, elections, in our opinion, are struggles between elements of the ruling class to have control of the state apparatus, right? If you control City Hall, control state house, you know, the governorship, you're able to push through policies that will benefit your economic interests, your economic class. For most Black people, we don't engage elections in that way. It's either out of fear for one boogeyman or the other, or it's based upon who we know, right? How popular somebody is. And we have to help our people understand in a much deeper way through political education and the kind of work that we do, that people should not be just dependent upon elections to solve our problems. As a matter of fact, history shows that anything that was done via the political process, whether it's from a bill to the civil rights or different laws, there was always heat on the street, right, to make those things happen, to push people to come to these conclusions. And that political power, economic power, is about having control of these institutions, being able to have institutions that we control, that we develop our own leadership from, our own cadre from, that we're able to articulate what our needs and interests are, and that these things are not controlled by the ruling class or by even by Black or white middle class interests who try to fund us, right? That we need to be able to be self-sufficient, whether that's an education program like a school or a tutoring program, whether it's a food co-op, whether it's a healthcare co-op. All these things are micro examples of us building our own power. But at the end of the day, the ability to be able to control these institutions for our own needs are the building blocks, right, of what the party is about. And that eventually will translate to how we win elections and win influence throughout the state.
You know, and that's the reason why I'm asking is because in Philadelphia, particularly in the last, I don't know if Elliot has been in the last month, there's been some definition being presented as Philadelphia being a apartheid state. I mean, Philadelphia, Black Philadelphia being in an apartheid condition.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look at, you know, and I looked at some of the, you know, on your Facebook page and some of the information, especially was a report, the ABC report, some of the numbers, you know, the percentage of the population in Baltimore, and as you say, you know, in the state in general, and then the business relationship and how much is being applied, how many people are being employed by Black businesses specifically, compared to the amount of Black business that may exist in Baltimore. Once again, it kind of reflects what we see here in Philadelphia. So that's one of the reasons I wanted to, you know, help, because in other areas it may be the same formation. So, which brings me to the question about what are you looking to, what have you worked towards as you move towards the state convention? What are you looking as outcomes that you're looking to come out of the state convention?
Brother Brandon, you want me to take this? You want to jump in?
I'll take it. Yes. Mm-hmm. So out of this conference, we do look forward to not only sharing information and contacts, and as well as the opportunity to bridge connections with organizers along the Northeast Seaboard, and also those in the 23 counties of Maryland and Baltimore City. But we look forward to gaining membership. We look forward to building the party at a capacity where we can get a critical mass that will be able to mobilize in their area to have a disciplined structure that can be focused totally on the capacity of uplifting the struggle of the poor black and brown working class community, and also having a social economic justice platform to guide them to do so. And through this conference is an opportunity to be able to speak with like-minded organizers, people with different parts that can add to and contribute towards a solution, those that's around the question of gentrification, those around the question of generational and mass incarceration, as well as unemployment and other aspects that we find ourselves maligned with in a society where, although it says that we're free, but the rules and how the policies are put is subjugating us to play by a different playbook, that honestly, that as we come closer, the goal line tends to be moved further and further away from where we are. So it's time for us to be able to come to a conference to recruit new membership, and as well as new organizers to the party, and being able to bridge that contact as a beacon and as a sign that independent black organization and organizers in the state and along the Northeast Seaboard in the U.S. in areas that are like it can work together and build an incubator of power.
I say,
you know, I want to transition into some of the, because I looked at the website, Richard, and I think it's 11 different planks and platforms under the Ujima Party. But it's three I want to focus in on and get Brother Brandon and Brother Namdi's outlook on this moving forward into the convention. And we're going to do this. We're going to take a brief break first. And then when we come back, we'll transition into that question. People can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with Brother Brandon and Brother Namdi of the Ujima's People's Progress Party, leading up to their convention in Baltimore this upcoming Saturday, May 11th, in Baltimore, Maryland, on 430 East Belvedere Avenue in Baltimore. We'll be right back. Again, you can get involved in the conversation with our guests. Time for Awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I try. transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me had held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
Not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
Cool.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the Slave Theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple, it really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we are black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House, you can even put him in his, he'll still be a Tom. You can put them anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Encourage, let me just say this before our time winds up, and that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Green sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are, and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in conversation this evening with organizers of the Ujima People's Progress Party. Brother Brandon and Brother Namdi are with us. We're discussing the planks and platforms of the party, some of the initiatives leading up to the statewide convention May 11th in Baltimore, Maryland. You can get involved in the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Brother Brandon, Brother Namdi, I was looking at some of the planks and platforms of the party, and there's three I want to focus in on because some of the things happening in Baltimore is very similar, if not the exact same things that we're facing in Philadelphia. And it's almost like a twin city type of thing because your dynamic there in Baltimore is the same in Philadelphia. It's just more people. It's over a million people in Philadelphia. 43%, 44%, something like that of the city is black. It's predominantly black city. The political offices, the so-called power positions in the political offices are dominated by blacks. Up until last year, you had, not last year, last election, you had a black mayor, you had a black police commissioner, black fire chief, black district attorney, overwhelming predominantly black city council. And the same situations that you're facing in Baltimore, we are facing here. Same type of problems. But let me go into some of the planks that you're dealing with in Baltimore, because the same strategy that you're attempting to use there can be used in other cities. One of your planks here, we stand for community control of housing to ensure affordable and safe housing. Now, what you're talking about is basically a buffer or a strategy against gentrification that's running rampant in all of these cities across the country, whether large or small. Talk about how politically, because some of our people don't understand it, how politically black people, being a, what they say politics is local, how black folks, if you get the right mentality of our people in these offices, that we can put a stop to this gentrification, controlling the properties in the community, which is the tax base of any community, funneling dollars towards rehabbing homes, turning over schools that have been shut down over to the community for use by the community. Talk about some of these things, Brother Brandon, Brother Namdi, in reference to the plank that you have about being in control of housing.
Yes, brother. I'll definitely keep it short because I know this is a twofold question and it goes deep.
Okay.
So when we talk about the housing question, we understand that whole blocks and dilapidated homes and abandoned tenements, the city has a huge percentage, if not the largest percentage, of the ownership of housing next to slumlords and those who are holding, looking for the next economic or housing boom of a wave of gentrification, of knocking down homes, making them green spaces and selling plots. Now, I say this because with the city having that leverage over homes and not having an initiative to create them, to use them for community centers, or even create an housing plan where it gets workers in that community to become more accessible to be owners instead of renters, what they'll do is they'll look for developers or a nonprofit entity to have a private and public partnership, and it'll go from a proposal put by the community to try to put up a community land trust to take the homes back to shooting down a resolution like that to actually selling that development or that whole block or strip for just a dollar to the highest bidder to have a private and public partnership, so they're able to have a piece of not only the community, the homes, but now they're invested and integrated into the community, where we no longer have to look forward to people who are struggling to stay and work and save up every nickel and dime to be there. They're now looking forward to being pushed out, priced out of their own community, because all the other areas that surrounds it looking forward to being prime real estate investment for the next billionaire tycoon or anyone that City Hall is willing to listen to, because they have a dollar in there in their coffer.
If I may, you know, just to give, what I'm looking at is an article in the Baltimore Sun that came out about a $10 million redevelopment of vacant row homes in West Baltimore. How does that fit as to what you spoke to, as far as the, how do the community relate to that, that type of development? Because it seems to have all elements that you just mentioned.
Yeah. You go ahead, brother. You got it.
Yeah, just to pick up on that. So what was helpful was during the intermission, there were some really helpful.
Your voice faded, brother Namdi. Get a little closer to your mic.
Sorry.
Good.
What was helpful during the intermission? There was some quotes that were taken about how this relationship works, right? This oppressive relationship,
mm-hmm.
and that there are gatekeepers who are black who facilitate the process of stealing our resources, right?
Mm-hmm.
Through the Democratic Party, we have a black mayor, we have a black city council president, and a majority black city council, right? They're able to, through their legitimization as representatives, be the faces of the theft of our resources, whether it's our homes, whether it's through ever-increasing utility bills, water bills. All these things are tax-related that can take people's homes from them, right? You've had a history of redlining black communities, so there was no actual capital available to us. You have the housing crisis just prior to this, where black people were exploited through the loan process to even get your home. All of this is the backdrop for where we are, right? When $10 million is deployed by city council, it sounds like initially this great idea to take this historic area, great homes that just need to be redone, revitalized, right? Give this community a shot in the arm. But none of this was a discussion when black homeowners were there who wanted that capital to be able to fix and improve their community. When you had thriving businesses there that were servicing working class communities. Now that these communities are abandoned, as Brother Brandon had said, the city owns much of the vacant stock in this city. Anywhere from a low number of 1,600 homes to as many as 16,000. They literally play around with that number, right? Depending upon how you define a vacant house. The city owns quite a bit of this stock, and they could have made these houses available long ago to black renters, homeowners, to get these buildings and to renovate them. We have young people looking for skills and resources to grow their skill sets, to build these houses and make them available for the community. The $10 million is a giveaway to investors who are going to swoop in, revitalize these houses, put them on sale at market rate, right, which already prices out most black people in the city. The median income for black people in the city is about $34,000. And I don't know how that necessarily compares to Philly, but the median income for white people in the state, in the city of Baltimore, is almost $54,000. So you're talking about people who can't even really compete dollar for dollar to be able to get these homes. And so you'll get priced out of your own neighborhood, or at least an area that used to be a part of your neighborhood. And with that, you're pushed out now into the suburb areas, where our voting block, our economic block, is being dispersed, right? And it is a pattern that happens over and over again. It's driven by the need to bring capital into the city, but not to invest in the people who already live here, but to kick us out, to disperse us, and then to be able to, you know, bring other people in. And sometimes that may be black middle-class people from other areas, but you're talking about people with no history, no connection to economic or political power here, and they're able to be manipulated, right, to now serve a whole new evolving class of capital that's not in our best interest. And that was what that platform position is really about. How do we have control of our the very basic concept of a decent place to live, whether that's through cooperatives, whether that's through making affordable housing. There are all kinds of solutions that are off the table, and we have to put them back on the table and let the people decide how we're going to develop our communities and our city.
Hey, Naomi, this is Eartha Harris. Can you hear me?
Hello? Good evening. Good evening.
Please. One of the things that I think, again, that since you went to that piece is that we got to really start looking at individual people and getting some of the people in the community strong at what resources they did have. So, for instance, identify those in our community that are homeowners, making sure they're stabilized, that they're not in jeopardy of losing their homes. Identify the homes in our neighborhoods that's obviously, we can take them over or are for sale, because, again, even with these people making low salaries, they have a lot of money that they can give toward home ownership. Now, I've been putting this out for a minute because I am a credit repair. A lot of people are getting turned down because they can't even get the first part of their own money. So when they're being able to get $40,000, $60,000 toward buying a home, but they can't even get a loan of the $40,000 or $50,000 on their own. So I think we need to start with some type of campaign that individually gets the community strong. And then another thing, when I start doing this whole analysis of credit, if we can get ourselves together and we can go borrow the money and put pools of money up collectively, if people could go get $20,000, $30,000, or $40,000 and put it towards start purchasing some of the land, because we don't even have to buy houses. We could just really go around and purchase a whole lot of this land, this empty land that's in Baltimore, and hold on to it. Because right now, everybody is really like struggling just to survive themselves. So it's hard for us to do a collective thing when we can't help individual people.
Yeah, thank you, sister. So I think, again, and those again, are discussions that are off the table right now. Our elected officials, be they black or white, are not making those kind of arguments or those kind of discussions happen about the development. I'll give you an example of something alternative, especially around this question of credit. Mm-hmm. There's a program called NACA, and it exists all over this country. It's a program that basically allows people who have no credit or bad credit history to go through a program helping them to clean up their background, not necessarily to have a high credit score because it's not based upon credit, but they have a relationship with underwriters that say pretty much once they verified and certified somebody as ready to be in their program, they make monies available to that family to be able to get a home, whether it needs renovation, whether they can buy it outright. And they pretty much allow themselves to be the front for that person to say, hey, we're going to ensure that these people are able to pay their bill and not default, right? And this program already exists all over the country, right? There's nothing like that exists specifically being put forward by the local government. Why? There's no reason why it can't be done. It is just no political will, no political interest, right? The people who are vested in making money at the expense of black, working, and poor people have the ear of the elected officials. They pay the monies to their campaigns. We've had a whole mayor being disrobed politically, right, in Baltimore City that made national news, and all she did was business as usual and got put out on Front Street. And we're not saying whether she was right or wrong, even though we have real political problems with her. The fact is that we have a ruling class in this city who make the real calls. And calls that would make a difference in people's lives are not allowed to be discussed during the campaign season or even during City Hall. And that's part of what we're challenging people to do. Use the platform, use the venue that the party will create for candidates to have these discussions and challenge the preconceived notions about how we move forward, give up new plans, give up new ideas, and let's empower ourselves, because if we don't win it as a policy, we need to be putting these things into place by going to the individuals and putting our resources together.
Brother Nandi, Brother Brandon, how many schools, because I know in other cities, including Philadelphia, Chicago, and others, they have closed dozens of schools in the black communities. And in Philadelphia, they've turned some of them into luxury condos, or got plans to turn them into luxury condos for whites that can afford them. Is this going on in Baltimore also, where the schools have been closed and plans to turn them over to developers?
Yes, it's been taking place often, and a lot of it has been done due to underfunding, and the funding formula in some of the cases, if not all, is the property value of the community where the school sits pays into the municipality for the school to be able to receive funding, although you have that state, a large amount of the state expenditures come towards some of the, a percentage of the city budget, and the city itself has a budget for schools. But if there's no tax revenue base in those communities, which, as we were explaining, far as with the housing crisis that we're seeing here, then a lot of those schools are not able to sustain, where in most cases, schools that are still operating with lead in their water as well are also forced to be inside of overcrowded classrooms with 30 to 40 students at the same time, and also are forced to deal with the societal conditions of the unemployment, the crime in the community, the over-policing, many polarities and polarizing contradictions that are happening at the same time that are forcing schools to be swing-shifted and language being changed anywhere from, well, we're going to open up a 21st century school. That means this school on the side of town closer towards a more affluent district will be open. And another, this school on the other side of town will be open in a more affluent district. And the other ones that aren't are going to be closed down. So the kids who are going to the less privileged districts are going to the more privileged districts in the area, while we're seeing overcrowded classrooms, more schools being closed, community schools at that, and also the funding is question hasn't been answered as well.
If I may, is there an election coming up, local election in Baltimore this month?
I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because I thought I didn't know if I was looking at the wrong dates. Because I was wondering, as y'all move towards the convention, are there, and you speak about the elector, you know, the people who are in the political positions, are there people who have political interests that align with the party's outlook that either has been participating in some kind of way, especially as it relates to around housing?
So that's something that we're going to use the convention to make a decision about. We definitely have some experience there. It's not our primary goal, because in the past we've been approached by people who we would say had some opportunist tendencies about partnering with us, wanting to be candidates. Part of the process that we understand is just like any community that's really consolidated, it is able to vet and to develop its own candidates. So part of that process is coming out of the conference. We'll be launching our summer Fannie Lou Hamer Leadership Development Institute training. People who are interested in running have to go through that. We have to make sure they understand these politics, the history of not just what we're doing, but the whole history of the black electoral experience. The very first Black Panther Party was in Louisiana, and they formed a party to run against the Democratic machine, which bragged about being the white man's party then. And so people have to know the history of how we got from here, from there to here. And we also have to make sure we train them, do all the other things, fundraising, communication. There are people who've already run, who have experience and lessons to teach as well. That gives us a full, because as an independent, we wouldn't have to run in the Democratic primaries, which happen usually in February or March of 2020. So we would have a lot of time to develop our folks and to vet them and be able to put them out there. That is something that we would like to do, but we're not going to just allow anyone just show up and say, hey, I want to run.
Okay. We're in conversation this evening with Brother Brandon and Brother Namdi, organizers and activists in the Ujima People's Progress Party. Their convention, statewide convention, is slated for May 11th, 2019 in Baltimore, Maryland. And you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got some calls on hold. Before I go to them, Brother Namdi, Brother Brandon, let me move over to one of the other planks I want to focus on, that the party says the party stands for community control of police to end police brutality and corruption. Now, we've seen what went on in Baltimore and the uprising when Freddie Gray was murdered by cops. Talk about the party's position on this and some of the things that the party wants to implement with candidates running.
Sir, I'll jump on that hopefully quickly.
Okay. You go ahead, brother. I'm sorry.
So Baltimore right now is under a court-ordered decree where there's supposed to be oversight by the federal government in cleaning up the police department. That process, in our opinion, and we've been to these meetings where we stated up front, is a disaster. The people who were selected are all insiders and people who are in good graces with the police department, and we don't have any trust that that's going to produce any different results. What we're calling for are a civilian review board with some real teeth. Today we have something called a civilian review board, which again is so controlled by the police department and the local city government. It has no independence. It has no ability to investigate, on its own. It can't bring forward any charges, or suggested charges to be followed up on by the state's attorney. So it's useless. Whether that's held at the district level, which is always possible. And this is not something that we think has to just be policy, right? We can build our own review boards that are able to hold meetings and take information, investigate on our own, and bring this forward, or to escalate it up to the actual city level where there's a transformation of the police department. I also think the question about having our own internal policing capacity has to be looked at in a different way. The resources needed obviously need to be talked about, but we don't need the police to intervene in every situation. Not every situation requires it. And unfortunately, the police are used as the solution to every crisis that exists in our community, whether it's appropriate or not. So we have to actually talk about that. What does security look like for our community? What kind of resources we need for our safety? And those are kind of things, again, discussion-wise, are currently off the table.
You know, when we talk about the police situation across the country and our people being involved, if you're talking about cities that have a majority black population, and I'm not talking about some of the people that's in control now in these cities, we can develop strategies to police our own communities. White folks already have these things implemented in their communities. When Trayvon Martin went to visit his father down there in that the complex where his dad lived, they already had a town watch or whatever, that fool that killed him was a member of the town watch. Any black person that don't think that white folks already have these mechanisms set up, then travel to a white community, whether it's in a city or in a suburb, and get out your car and just start walking and looking around like you don't really know where you're going. And watch how fast the police roll up on you or somebody in the neighborhood calls the cops. They already have these mechanisms set up. They have reflective jackets. Some of them have walkie-talkies where they can communicate with one another and let everybody know that there's some type of community watch group. These black elected officials can set these things up in our communities. They're supposed to be coming up with innovative ideas for the community, but they're just lackeys for white folks. It's not difficult for them to come up with these things and use tax dollars that's already there. We got a clown here in Philadelphia, the president of the city council, Darrell Clark, that came up with a suggestion for these type of people. What did they call him, Richard?
I forgot off the top of my head.
It was some type of community policing, but they were talking. They were talking about policing white neighborhoods, and this is a black man that's head of city council. These same ideas can be used in our neighborhoods.
And Brother Elliott, can I raise something that's important to our politics?
Yes, go ahead.
Is that what we want people to also understand is that the police in society, right? When you have a society split between workers and bosses, the haves and have-nots, the police become necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And the role of the police in society is to protect the interests of those who own, right? Police started out in this country as slave catchers, and they were taking property, which were us human beings, back to the owners.
Yes.
And as they evolved into the police departments, they've always had the job of protecting the vested class, the haves from the have-nots. And the problem that we have is that some of us deal with police as though their job is to serve and protect. And that is not their basic function in society. You can go to any country in this world, the police have the same role. And part of what we are aware of is that there has to be a struggle to be able to contain and push back the police, because our community as a whole is not an owning community, right? And therefore, we don't pay and control the real interests of the police, so we have to have mechanisms put in place to be able to check them. And when those mechanisms are in place, we also need the ability, as you're saying, to do some of the policing ourselves, because obviously the less engagement we have with a police department whose ultimate job is to control our community and not serve it, so that we have to have as little interaction with them as possible and be able to protect our own interests as a community when we can.
Now, let me ask you, Brother Nunn. Is it because in Philadelphia, the police department, and in relationship to the political formation, the FOP is a very strong political entity in relationship to candidates. Does that hold true in Baltimore?
It does.
Yes,
especially. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
No. Yes, it does indeed. So much so is that the FOP themselves, outside of just endorsing candidates, they also, too, are chummy, or should I say hobnots, with the business community. And that kind of term has to be used in this case, where anytime the same business community can tell the mayor, hey, deny the citizens or the local government bill from passing for $15 a bill, can also tell the mayor in so many words or in so many explanations that we need to continue to fund the police department, and underfunding them to fund schools is not in the program. And not to mention having special districts where the FOP themselves would have union members who can work among the ranks of community block patrols, and as well as at local colleges where they're responding to police calls on college campuses as a part of a joint initiative. That lets myself and anyone who is politically aware know that as a special interest group, as the FOP, they themselves choose the ability to investigate their own just as much as they choose to disregard and have work slow down when they agree with the public agenda or the public outcry to hold police accountable equally.
Let me grab a couple calls and get them involved. If you have a question or comment for our guest, let's go to 410-209. Carl, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. What's your name, brother?
Beninush.
Beninush?
Yes.
Go ahead, Beninush.
You can call me Anish. Yes, I was listening to some of the comments and questions, and the thing about gentrification, the voting, we just had a vote and locally with our local sheriff. Our local sheriff is the one that has all these buildings in the city and makes all these buildings vacant and makes the city look like it's run down, like it's the inner city that's doing it. We had a person run against our sheriff. Our sheriff has been in the office for 30 years, I hear. And every time we run against him, everybody keeps voting for that sheriff. They don't vote that sheriff out. The sheriff's department is comes out putting notices on people's houses and put them in the street and everything like that. He's solely responsible for the abandoned houses around the city, yet we don't vote him out. And as for the other, that's why we need an independent party like Regima, so we can have representation locally, so we can put people like him out of office, so we can start rebuilding our neighborhood ourselves. And as for the comment, the lady said that we got to find out that people that beaten the slaves or blacks are beating the slaves, we got to deal with them first. I don't agree with that at all. I never have agreed with that. Both slaves are enslaved. Even if the white master is standing there and it's a black person beating the other slave, both people are enslaved. So long we've been divided and running against each other, the house and the field mentality nonsense. Malcolm X was wrong about that. Both people need to unite. Both of them are enslaved, and they need to welcome each other back in the fold, liberal, conservative, whatever, Democrat or Republican. They need to join together and join forces to help out the community. That's my comment.
Well, let me ask you something, Brother Nurse. that based on the comment you just made, and I want you to kind of expound on that for me based on this question.
Expound on what again?
No. I want to ask you a question based on the last comment that you made. Baltimore is similar to Philadelphia in that you have blacks. Now, let me ask you, before I ask you this question, the sheriff that you were talking about that's been in power 30 years, is he a black man?
No, he is not.
Okay. Now, we had a sheriff here in Philadelphia that was sheriff for quite a...
No, he is actually black. He is, brother.
Okay. All right.
Anderson is black?
Yes, he is.
Okay. Now,
sorry about that.
Okay. Now, yeah. Let's table that. We had a sheriff here in Philadelphia that was in power for quite a while. That's not sheriff anymore. He left. He was out. He voted out of office or left office and moved to another state. And they're just indicting him for some of the same things that Brother Nominee was just talking about. Funneling properties that was taken over by the sheriff to white developers. Now, that's just an example of what I'm talking about. In a lot of these cities, you have blacks that have ran for these offices that's lackeys to white folks. They answer to Jewish interests. They answer to other white interests. They don't answer to your interests. They become like enemies to the community. So what do you do? You can't. Some of these people are unreasonable. You've got Brother Nnamdi and Brother Brandon that's trying to form a black independent party. They're going to run up against this offensive line. See, this white supremacy and whites in general are like the quarterback. But then you got an offensive, and I'm going to use a football analogy, you got a whole offensive line generally in front of these white folks that's black people. What do you do when you confront it with this offensive line, Brother Nush?
Well, first of all, both of these folks, Anderson is black, we have to talk to them. We have to get down and talk to them. We don't actually consider them an enemy. I don't really think is they become an enemy to the community. I think it's more got to do with corruption. We had a mayor here, and the mayor surprised me. She took a whole lot of money and ran off with it. Now, I'm thinking when people get in these politics, when us as blacks get into the politics, because we got a whole city here with black officials, yet the city is ran down into the ground, from the mayor all the way down. So I think that most of the times we have to look out for corruption and look out for corruption bad, because most of our people are going into these positions with lack. They lack funding, they lack finances at home and everything like that. So when they get in there, they have to play ball game with the Jews and the
No, they don't have to. They don't have to.
You're right. They don't have to, but they do. They don't have to, but they do. And they get corrupt and they run for that money, and they run for that money first, and then they sell us out. And I think we have to address that by talking to these people face to face before or and after they get in office and hold them accountable and say, listen, we know that you are representing the not our best interest, but we really want you to represent our best interest the best you can. If you get corrupt in there and you start grabbing that Jewish money, you start grabbing that Republican money, we're going to vote you out next round. And we have to vote in an independent block. We have to learn how to vote. That's more important than anything to answer to your question. We have to learn how to vote in a block. All of us, we vote non-intelligently right now. If someone sing and dance and do the jigaboo or do the nay-nay on TV, we put them in office. No, we need to vote our interests and say, listen, if you're not going to do our interests, we're going to vote as a whole. to vote you out of office. And that's what I think we need to do.
Hey, thank you for your vote.
And is that what Brother Brandon, Brother Naomi, is that what the Ujima Party, People's Progress Party, is supposed to facilitate as a political formation, that type of?
I think it's a little more complex than that. I think history is very helpful for us. Kwame Nkrumah tried to warn us in the late 60s about neocolonialism as the last stage of imperialism, and it's an effective strategy. What we understand is that there's also there's a question of our national interests, our race, and also a question of class that can't be separated from each other. Ideally, we would like to be able to have the kind of political power that we could use, even as someone is a Catherine Pugh as an example, who was just pushed out of office. If we had the kind of political organization where we could force her to understand what it is that we want and be able to move forward. Unfortunately, she showed even during her election, during her time in office, she promised, because of the political weight that had been built around the $15 an hour demand, that she took it on, that she said she would sign that bill if it came in front of her. And as soon as the first year, as soon as it came in front of her, she vetoed it, which was a real big blow to all her supporters, because this was one of the things that pushed her over the top with a lot of poor working class people. I think that we have to be even more intelligent than just accepting any black leadership. What the brother explained is that there's a machine that functions, right? The machine is well-oiled, it's funded, it's trained, it's developed. There's work put in to be able to put forward any candidate that represents the machine. And I mean, literally, I ran against a guy whose slogan was vote for the Democrats. He actually did not campaign much in the general election. And so the brother that he's talking about who runs against him has some really creative ideas. He runs often as a Republican so that he can contest him. And it's not that his ideas aren't worthy of listening to. The fact is that what we also have to recognize is that if we really want to contend for power, is that we have to build all the institutional structure that makes it possible for people not only to hear us, but to understand who's in front of them, right? Anderson has to be exposed. He has to be put on Front Street as an agent who serves the interests of white power and capitalism,
okay,
right? And that he's opposed to us. That's where we are with that question. Once you expose the who these people are, you may not win, but you've given the people the ability to now move forward with, you know, challenging all the stuff that he did. It's not about just winning the election. We have to make people aware of their class and race issues at interest so that they can be well prepared, especially in cities like these where most of the faces you see are black.
Good, good. Let's Brother Nush, thank you for your call. Let's move to Newport News. Are you there?
Hello, comrades. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
Look, I'm doing fine, Elliot and Brother Richard. Look, all I want to say, interject in here, is I understand where these young brothers are talking and where they're headed. But part of what we're overlooking is the people, and I've tried here in my community for about 5 decades. You got to empower some of these young people to show up at these board meetings and the regular city council meetings and pay attention. You got cell phones and stuff now. You can, even if you don't understand what's being said, if you record it, you can bring it back to the people that can make sense of it. I'll give you a quick example. That mayor in Baltimore, they didn't just out her for this deal with getting paid for her books. That was part of her payment. And when she no longer could serve the purpose, that's when they exposed what they hooked her on. And part of how you get that is you have to have people that are willing to go to these planning committees and sit and record what goes on. Ask questions to force people into public statements. Because along the way to where you're going, these people are already putting other plants in there. And I call it, many times on this platform, 1710 meritorious manumission. When you get a person who is more concerned with advancing themselves over the community, that is what has kept us down as a people. And the best way to expose them is to raise hell when they're conducting their meetings. That's the only way that you can establish that they're corrupt. Don't wait until they're ready to put them out and now they're going after them. I raised hell the whole time that Obama had Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch, because some of these problems the federal government knew about and chose not to act because the people in charge were the black faces, the two I just named. This stuff, they cannot. As a matter of fact, when you look at Baltimore, I'm sure these gentlemen know it. Tyrone, what was his name, the activist? Tyrone West, Powers. From what I understand, he was a community activist that actually was trying to do the right thing with this Citizens Council for police. But what happened? The powers that be in Baltimore got a federal judge appointed, who they are the ones that were funding him, and he basically threw out the commission that the citizens elected and appointed his own. Just, and I heard you say it earlier in the program, appointed lackeys that he was familiar with, and changed all the powers of the Citizens Bureau. The only way you're going to get these people is you have to know their daily operations. And to do that, you have to use some youth, because if old heads like me go in there, they jump to attention. But when young people show up and appear not to be concerned, I'm telling you, surreptitiously, that telephone, the communications and the ability we have to monitor people now, you have to engage the young people. Because 9 times out of 10, people in my generation are too deep in debt and worried about trying to ease on out of this world without having too much pain. And I'm just going to tell you, brother, get some young people in there, get them before the system gets in, and you can be successful at what you're going. I applaud you, and I wish you well.
Thank you for your call. Let's go to 215.
Yes, the last caller made a great synopsis.
Wait a minute. 215, are you there? Okay. 215 must step away from their phone. Let's go to 410. 410, are you there? 410, are you there?
Yes, the last phone call made it.
What's your name, brother?
Brother Terry.
Okay, Terry. Go ahead, Terry.
The last caller made an interesting comment about the aged individual trying to deal with life with less pain as possible. And during the process of aging, we find ourselves paying for homes that we can't even afford to park in front of the door without having to pay the parking authorities annual fees. And that don't even, that's just allowing you to park in the zone that you live in. Not to say that because you pay taxes, you're responsible for your door to the curb, but you can't even park in front of your door. Now, that's an issue for an aged individual who really can't barely carry the packages from the car to the house, let alone a block away. So if possible, is parking authority could tune in and catch some of the concerns of the aged individual who would like to park in front of their own door. I appreciate you taking my comment.
Thank you, Brother Terry.
I would like to say that what the brother from Newport said is very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And again, some of this stuff that we've helped really strip out from what we, you know, some of our earlier assumptions. The process of building a movement and not being fixated on elections is that the work of politics isn't just election time, right? Yes, City Hall is important, going to the Board of Estimates. All those things are very, very important because these are the open, this is the way in which business gets done. Part of our critique of Pew being put out like this, it wasn't so much that what she did was even a mystery, because when she ran in 2016, candidates who ran against her already knew her history as a pay-to-play official, right? This was well known in the establishment. What we are concerned with was essentially, what didn't she agree to do? What did she do that caused them to have to put her out, so that now all the business that pretty much is how things get done gets out there? You know, and she, you know, not excusing herself when she, you know, when she had clearly had, you know, ties to people and making votes. These are the kind of places that we need to be at. We need to be able to watch this process intervene. But also what happens in even in the communities. We're encouraging our members to be a part of community associations, right? This is where at the very micro level, you get to understand financing. You get to see your city councilman or other people come through. You don't have to make noise. You could just be in the back taking notes. The brother said you could have a video camera to get it on public statement and put it out. We have social media. I think we got to really go back to the questions of how do we build power. In some places, the Democratic Party used to have what they call block, block organizations. They used to have district organizations. We got to start thinking in that way in which we're building power, you know, from the bottom up, and so that we have as much influence where we can. So again, it's not about just winning an election. It's about having real influence in the spaces that we are occupying. And if we don't win elections, we can force elected officials to do what it is that we need them to get done or pay a consequence.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll continue the conversation. You can get involved, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with activists and organizers of the Ujima People's Progress Party. Brother Brandon and Brother Namdi are with us. And you can get involved right after this break. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard the special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. With this new sense of dignity and this new sense of self-respect, a new Negro came into being with a new determination to suffer, to struggle, to sacrifice, and even to die if necessary in order to be free.
Hang on to the world as it spins around.
All our people. Righteous by nature, wicked by circumstance, so we are going to try to save our people. Take control of our communities. Anybody that wants justice, come out of those parties that won't give you justice, and let's have a justice party and set up our own candidates, run them in the cities. Take down the weak, blood suckers of the poor, and cast them out, and set up people that will fight for justice for us.
Because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world. There's a whole lot of illusions about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these belief systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And there's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said, there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion, was meant to dominate and to control. The Alps had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive? You let people redress something that you invented, sell it back to you, and enslave you through it.
If we are to defeat the European, if we are to master this earth and take back this earth from the European, then we must outthink the European. We must then be creative. That puts the learning emphasis on the how-ness, the how to think as such, and to the use of knowledge as a tool of mastery. So it's a very different kind of thing. As a result, you see, of the control and the paternalism of Europeans over black people. You see, the other thing that we must recognize, even if the European becomes good and nice and accepts us and so forth, the fact that he would still be in control creates a what we might call a benevolent paternalism, which still to a great degree helps to maintain this passive mode of thinking and this passive mode of knowledge.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening, and we're in conversation with Brother Namdi and Brother Brandon, organizers and activists of the Ujima People's Progress Party, whose convention is May 11th in Baltimore, Maryland. And we'll get some details before Brother Lamdi and Brother Brandon leave about how you can participate, how you can be involved, the location and other things before we wind down the program. Brother Brandon, Brother Lamdi, before I kind of turn things over to you and kind of let you give the people the nuts and bolts and how they can get involved, let's talk about one of the last platform planks that I want to kind of showcase and get you to talk about. The Ujima People's Progress Party stands for economic development that provides an economic opportunity and commerce within the black community. If we don't control the businesses in our community, then we really don't have a community. We have black elected officials in both Baltimore and Philadelphia, and an inordinate number of black elected officials, but we don't control the businesses in our community. And this is directly political. It's something that can be controlled politically. Talk about it from your men's perspective. Talk about it from your men's perspective, Brother Namdi, Brother Brandon.
All right. So looking at it from my perspective specifically, there's a saying that I think I've heard it. It's politics without economics is just noise. It's just substance without, it's just symbols without a substance. And that's something that has taken a serious hold on me when I think about the economic standard and the disinvestment in the black community, specifically in the state of Baltimore City. And when I think of that question and I hear that often, I try to remember that we're not here to make a living off of making a killing on someone else that's trying to make a living. That's not economic. That's oppression. That's, you know, exploitation. And wanting to remove a parasitic or a savage capitalist model that we all are under in this American empire, we think of, well, what are the ways that we can bring economic opportunities to our community, far as food, far as housing, far as engineering, science, and other formulas that the black body and the African mind is very well capable in under a co-op model. But we know that to do these things as well, it takes a lot of resources, take education, information, and also time to apply that in practice. So in our community, looking at the disinvestment where contracts tend to go downward to developing downtown businesses and entities, and any contracts that comes uptown tend to go towards demolition, demolishing, and taking away, a lot of it has to be more addressed upon the people where, what do we do? Do we look at the models on how to raise funds and be able to put a petition or a ballot petition or a resolution together while also circling our talents and our skills into a bank or a base that us ourselves can deal with allied cities and states who are also in bed with coming up with the alternative models? And co-op gardens is one part of the solution, but we also have to think about the natural resources, the energy. How do we procure the labor itself to be able to produce so our economics follow our politics? And with that, a lot of it does have to do with being able to take the resources that are already there or stripped from us and being robbed blind from the community, from the state themselves. That means that those small minority business contracts and other entities that work within the state-sanctioned oppression formula, we have a great deal of getting that, and also should have access to those tools where workshops, the ownership to be able to have access to dollar homes, to use those homes for co-op housing, to be able to work within the confines of commerce, retail, and produce our own goods as well as consume them, and have a fair shake with getting loans and securing loans to be able to open up the doors of opportunity and business in our community as well, without actually living through a capitalist exploitative model. So to answer your question specifically, I believe that we do have to look at models like Jackson, Mississippi, the Jackson Cush Plan, and what's that, the Renaissance Co-op of North Carolina, And we have to really put theory and practice together and challenge ourselves to do some praxis along the line of actually disciplining a model that man, woman, and child can have the basics of health, housing, education, transportation, and employment, and education as well, without actually looking at empowering one person in the name of white or European domination models of capitalism.
Okay.
So
go ahead.
Can I also
just jump in there?
Mm-hmm. So, in part, of course, obviously, as the brother said, gentrification is how all of this plays out. It's not just about taking your homes. It's about a model and an idea about what economic development looks like and at whose consequences, you know, bear the weight of that, right? When we talk about some of this as well, this economic development question, the biggest employers in Baltimore are Johns Hopkins University, Johns Hopkins Hospital, the University of Maryland Medical System, which is just a part of this whole question about Captain Pugh being exposed with the books. And actually the list, if you went down the list, most of them were either universities or medical facilities. These are employing thousands of people. The kind of capital that you need to compete with those aren't things that just happen overnight. We understand that. But we have, because of the way this capitalist system works, black workers are often at the bottom ring of being hired, first to be fired. And so we don't have the ability to be able to have some kind of a net that catches us other than what they would provide us through social service, which has its own corrosive, relationship to our community. We're talking about being able to have the resources that we need when people aren't employable for whatever reason, that they be allowed to have their own dignity, to feed their families, to employ other people, to have commerce that serves our interests internally as a community, but also to be able to do business with people who want to buy our goods, right? That our community is not looked at as a no-go zone or some kind of pariah, that we are able to actively participate. Capitalism is the game. And so how do you minimize some of those pitfalls, as the brother was saying? Cooperative models have to be talked about.
Yes.
The way we lend money and loan money out, the way we develop our institutions, economic institutions, have to be reevaluated.
Yes.
Without any political will to have that kind of economic discussion, what we'll continue to get is a community that votes for representatives who continually just, you know, like a vampire relationship, literally suck the blood out of our community, and we have no resources that we can control to be able to say, these are our interests, these are our demands, and if you don't, we're able to cut you off. We can't do that more and more every year.
Yeah, Brother Richard?
Yeah, I was, you know, I'm fighting, and I agree with both perspectives, but, you know, and I've always, when we get to this political economic perspective, I guess I keep looking at floating my ideals, and I wanted Brother Naimi and Brother Brandon to see what you think, because I agree, in capitalism, we recognize what kind of system it is. And so this is the question I'm having, as you deal with your political party formation. One of the assets that was taken from us and really and utilized in the capitalist formation was our human labor. And in that is our dignity. And one of the things I'm raising is, shouldn't we control from a political and economic perspective, the development of what they now call human capital, which means the whole education infrastructure, which is a political infrastructure, which is an economic infrastructure. In Philadelphia, the education infrastructure is a $1 billion business, right? They contract and whatever. And as I looked at the top 100 in the state of Maryland, and then the top 10 in the state of Baltimore, those that are employing 500,000, 200,000, 100,000 people, we cannot, and they are mature systems, as Amos Wilson says, we cannot compete with them. So we have to start from ground zero. So does that make sense to you from a political economic perspective? And yeah.
Yeah, absolutely it does. And part of the position that we hold is that there's an economic, obviously, component to what we're talking about, whether it's policy or whether it's a political struggle. There's also the element that we are very comfortable with around the question of black workers themselves being organized to be able to if they're not going to be working in businesses that black people can own for ourselves through the various options, right, being able to organize labor. Being able to be able to get the best pay that we possibly can, the best coverages that we can, because that is also something that's been denied to us as a class and as a race, right? And to be able to be organized under labor, to be able to say, you know what? Okay, we're going to have to sell our labor, but let's do it at the best price that we can get. Those resources come back to the community to allow us to do some of the other things, spend our money with our businesses that do exist, to support our candidates that have our agenda. Support independent black schools, because that's the part of it that we talk about. But how's the funding going to happen? If you're up against a school system that has a monopoly, right, and you literally don't have to pay any money to send your child to school, then you're asking poor people who are already struggling to come out of their pocket to be able to go send their children to these schools, which are necessary but poorly funded and again, can't contend. You know, we have our party is an anti-capitalist party. And even though we have these local discussions on the national front, let's not forget, just as we have discussions about what is happening to black people, what is happening to other people, Venezuela, what is happening in Africa. These are the kind of responses that we need to build in, because they're not just these, you know, well-wishing that we're just looking out for other people. The fact is the ability of this ruling class to steal resources, to steal people, to steal labor, you know what I mean? To do those things, enrich and empower themselves so that they can hold us down. We have to have a greater sense of what we're doing and why we're doing it, so that as we move forward, we make the right decisions that serve us long-term and short-term.
Very good.
Okay. Let me clear this board up before I turn things over to Brother Nadi and Brother Brandon to kind of let us to get us a synopsis of May 11th. Let's go back again. Let's kind of reroute ourselves. Go back to 215. 215, are you there? 215. Let's go. I don't know what's going on there. Let's go to 443. 443?
Yes.
443?
Hello? Okay. Hello?
Yes, yes. 443, are you there?
I'm here, my brother. Okay. I've been here waiting patiently.
Okay, I'm sorry. What's your name, brother?
My name is Baba Uji.
All right.
I would like to talk a little bit about the Baltimore situation.
All right.
And one time I was here, we talking about community policing.
Yes.
So Baltimore is real, and Eugene's People's Progress Party is well aware that here in Baltimore a couple of years ago.
Turn your radio down or your speaker down in the back. We're getting a little feedback. Great.
A couple of years ago, we had a situation up in Jewish
community. No, it's still up. It's still up. You still have it up.
Okay. They have people in the Jewish community. How about that?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. And young boys just went into the Jewish community and come out here with a problem because they think they're trying to rob them. You know? And so we're well aware that these other communities are able to control their community by organized groups. What we need to do is to do the same thing here in Baltimore City. In the Eugene's People's Progress Party, one of the components of the community policing would look something like that, where we would have organized people here in our communities to protect our community. You know, another issue that I wanted to speak on was the housing situation here in Baltimore. It has gotten to the point where, as the brother said, that the city owns mostly all of the blighted houses in the city. So the city is the landlord that keeps the city looking trashy and dirty, because the city has all the houses boarded up, and they won't even come up with a comprehensive program where they could give them to the citizens so that they could fix them up and make them viable communities. We have a situation here in the, they call it Broadway East community, where John Hopkins have taken that whole community and took all of that community and brought all those houses from there and moved all those people out and created housing there just for employees of John Hopkins. They had made those people promise that those people would be able to move back into those communities. Some of these people were raised in these communities, have been here 30 and 40 years, but they lost their housing because John Hopkins wanted to come in with a gentrification plan that basically said that, you know, like we're taking this community. And they do a lot of these things in Baltimore over eminent domain where the city can come in and just claim certain areas of the city and say, well, we need this area here for redevelopment. And if your house is sitting there on that box, it will take your house and give you a couple dollars for your house. And some of those people, older people, for the most part, who had been there years and years, find themselves out of the home that they had had for years and years and years that they were planning on turning over to their grandchildren. You know, and some of those areas were nice areas. Up here around Wolf and Washington Street, and those houses were nice houses, you know. And that went on over in East Baltimore. But there are also certain sections of the city right now that's under the same type of threat that they would do that. Now, one thing that we used to have in Baltimore is that when you was an elected official, there was some accountability that you bring some money back to the community that elected you. You know, we don't have that anymore. Where, you know, where the politician can come back and say, well, you know, well, I did this and I did that and I brought this back to the community. Very few will do that. Yesterday, I listened to Senator Cory McCray, who's the senator for the 46th District over in East Baltimore, and was talking about the things that he had brought back to the city. That's the first time in a long time that I've heard a politician that will come back to the community with a report of things that he's brought back to the community to try to make the community better. Senator Cory McCray is his name. He is the senator that is responsible for putting the legislation forth to make sure that when guys come out of prison, that they can immediately go to the voting booth and vote. You know, but the thing about our voting, as the brother says, you know, we need to be voting in a block. And so we need to have in and around our city some critical political education classes. The Genius People's Progress Party is trying to meet that end by developing a Fannie Lou Hamer political education class. And we will be doing that on a regular basis. We was doing it one time on Wednesdays up at Coppin State University. And it's very good for the whole citizenry. I just wanted to add those points. And thank you for your program.
Thank you for your contribution, brother.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Peace and blessings,
Namdi,
Brandon.
Let's go again to Bel Air, Maryland. Bel Air, are you there? Okay, let's try this one here at 410. 410, are you there?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Can you hear me? This is Ursa Harris.
Yes.
Hey. One of the things I still say that we're going to have to go back to some basics. The thing is that the majority of people do not participate in any political process, but the majority of people are in need of some solutions and opportunities. So I think the more that we can provide individual people with a solution, I don't know if it's financial, educational, health, or whatever, we need to start having our people look at us as one of the resources. For instance, don't care how terrible the schools are, even with you guys being on this call tonight, or we could have somebody come on the stream at 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening, we can always have alternative ways that we're educating our children. The same thing, like I said, can we do anything if we all are going to work and we haven't controlled any type of product or service? The guy named Ken Bridges, I put this out a while ago. When we organized the Million Man March, Ken Bridges said, all we have to do is pick one or two products or service that we all use. If we all will redirect our money into that, we can take that profit money and do some things with it.
There's too many people that I've run into that have all of these great ideas, but we have very limited resources. And it doesn't always have to be money, but we need some type of resources to help support our vision and our goals. The Baltimore, don't care what the political process here is in Baltimore, they're not stopping us from buying homes, educating our children, and making money. We have to get back to some self-determination stuff. Who needs a house? If anybody on this phone needs a house, we need to be working on what situation. Maybe you could be the brother or the sister who got a house. Who needs to have a some type of product or service that they need us to support or buy? So that's one of the things that frustrate me more than anything, is that we can name all of these things that's going on, but then we don't have any basic things that we're doing, self-determination things that we're doing. And we have people that's been out here for 20, 30 years creating solutions for ourselves. So we're not even really supportive of that. We're starting, personally, going back to the Art Social Club. Art Social Club, to me, is not only a building, it is a center that we should utilize, because that's where the Freddie Gray situation happened. That's the area that got billions of dollars. They're talking about what the city council talked about with that other area is nothing compared to the area that Pennsylvania Avenue had. But yet, they're real quiet about everything, because one of the things that they don't know how to do is to take that Art Social Club, which has been there for 100 years, and try to make it not what I want to say is the focus point. So, again, I think if we went back to the communities, set up tables throughout our communities, have community people come to us with whatever problem they have, and we solve their problem, they will participate more into some of the things that we're trying to bring to them.
Thank you, sister, for your contribution.
You're welcome.
All right. Brother Brandon, Brother Nomni, before we kind of talk about May 11th and give you a few minutes to kind of give us a synopsis, talk about the suggestion that the sister just made. I think she raises excellent points about us putting things out there for our community.
I mean, I agree, and in some points I have my disagreement, where to my elder, you know, who passed, and my teacher, brother as well, one of my teachers actually, Brother Abdul Khalif Jabbar, he said everything is political.
Okay.
From brushing your teeth to washing your face, everything's a political decision. So even when we are saying that, hey, we have that buying power and opportunity, not just with whose money, but who has money, and exactly how do we procure that money? How do we sustain ourselves? How do we procure lawyers? And as well as, how do you defer foreclosures and homes, and how do you stop people from signing off on homes where we literally had to vote for someone? And I say we as a constituent, because it's a process, just as the sister stated. You have to vote for someone in office to stop the auctioning off of homes for water bills. Only in Baltimore City that is possible. So that within itself is not necessarily in a vacuum where that question goes or where that response goes, but it also says that the lack of political development and the underdevelopment that we see will always have it as a one-shoe-fit-all approach, when in the reality, it really does come down to where's the political will of those in office to say, no, you know what? The ownership of Black homes is being devalued in this country, and it would behoove us to see exactly, looking at the data, the metrics, how does that translate, or those numbers transpose onto poor and working class Black and brown, especially students that are in college? How do we see them before or after graduation coming close to owning a home in the city? And when you're living in an economy where the cost of living and a livable wage are so far spread out, it becomes more of, you have these options, but to not say they're not political, it would kind of present a lot of contradictions of ones that are playing themselves out as we see today, based on the historical findings that have actually gridlocked or placed certain classes of people in one position where I'm just looking forward to working to that next job,
to get to that next place, to get to that next neighborhood, to, hey, I'm just working this job my whole life and I'm just not making enough. And now they already built a parking lot in my neighborhood and they're raising property values and I just was left this home from grandma and I can't afford it. So those contradictions have to be addressed, but more importantly, those root causes that produces these symptoms have to be dismantled and broken down with a strong approach.
Okay. Brother Namdi, Brother Brandon, give us a synopsis of May 11th.
Can I respond to that?
Sister, not at this time. I'm trying to get Brother Namdi and Brother Brandon to give us a little synopsis of May 11th and 430 East Belvedere Avenue in Baltimore. What's going to go on during the statewide convention?
Yes, thank you, brother. Mm-hmm. And thank you, Sister Ertha. The May 11th, we're going to have our conference. We have activists and organizers from throughout the state of Maryland coming to participate. We have brothers coming from the D.C., Northern Virginia area as well. Brother Khalid Rahim from out of Pittsburgh. We have brothers coming out of the BlackAgendaReport.com to participate. Brother Glenn Ford.
Okay.
Folks who, pretty much really have a submission similar to us, but they have different experiences. I think one of the things that we want to really point out is how do we collaborate? How do we learn from each other? As you said, the struggles are very identical. The players are different, but the game is still the same. The instruments that they use are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be able to share those experiences, right, to be able to understand and learn from each other. We're going to have three conferences that day. One of them is around, utilizing the electoral process itself to advance our struggles day to day. We have another discussion around institution building, how to serve the people, and not just in the nonprofit concept, but really building institutions that give power back to our communities and to people who live and use these institutions. And then our last conference is around, I'm drawing a blank here on the third one.
Grassroots organizing to serve the people.
It'll come to me.
Mm-hmm.
But we tried to have discussions that are relevant to not just the electoral process, right? Because that's only what, unfortunately, people think of politics, they think of election, they think of voting, they think of who's in office. But the truth is, politics is a lot of decisions and choices that are made every day. How do we get ourselves engaged? How do we become more involved and not so reactionary to what these decisions are? We should already know by now that most of the decisions that are going to come out of the state house, out of the city hall, are not going to serve our interests as a community. So we have to be moving to build institutions and to have fight backs that serve our interests and can either force an agenda that we've laid out or to be able to put in place the kind of people who we know, who we've vetted, who we've trained to be able to do those, to be the front for the fight. But of course, we can't expect any one person to be the one person to get it done, right? We have to build a movement. And that's the key takeaway from that conference, being able to build a movement, uniting with other folks, right, and to be able to lockstep statewide, be able to say, how do we help each other in our different struggles throughout the state?
Brother Namdi, Brother Brandon, listen, before you leave us this evening, and myself and Brother Richard have had discussions on this when we brought Brother Khalid Rahim in about, 2 months ago, Richard, something like that?
Yeah.
And we brought different people out to the venue where we had his presentation. You have a percentage of young black people who are active, who want to be active in the community, that don't have a desire not only to be in politics, but that they should even be involved in political formations. That mindset is out there.
Yeah.
How do you, now I know ways that I try to address it with them, Because, listen, and this is just me. I'll set it up by saying this, and then I want you men's opinions before you leave us. We're here in this country as of now, and we pay taxes. Right now, our tax money is going to other people. These political formations, whether they be Democrat or Republican, is taking black folks' tax money and using it against them.
Yeah.
While this system exists, we need people in these positions to act in our best interest. I think that what some of our people have to understand is that Europeans didn't invent politics. Political formations was on this planet being operated by our people long before Europeans became civilized. Maybe this form of politics that we experience here, Europeans might have adapted it or twisted some things or adapted it to their liking, but they didn't start political formations. I think that while we're here, we need to be starting political formations again, because systems don't last forever. There'll be an eventual failure of this system, but black folks are going to be here, and we need to know how to operate politically. So I think it's necessary that we start utilizing tools that we have. I want you two brothers' opinions before you leave us.
Certainly. So part of my response to that is that it's only logical to understand that organized oppression must be met by organized resistance.
Okay.
Right? And that individual or small group resistance may serve your own personal agenda, but you never run into, when you fight against the state, against the institution of white power, you may identify an individual, but that individual does not represent himself or herself. They represent contending interests, right? What we have to do is understand our interests and organize around those. Now, some of that may not actually have anything to do with City Hall, may not have anything to do with Annapolis, which is the state capital, or even your local city councilman, right? But it has everything to do with building power for ourselves and understanding that power does not exist in a vacuum, right? If we build an education institution, it doesn't go unnoticed by the state. You know what I mean? The fact that our children fail in the school system is not a mistake. It's not something that's a problem that they don't know how to fix. It's something that they've created as a system. So we have to be aware that as we try to solve problems in our lives, that organizations of oppression are going to respond to us. And it's in our best interest to be organized around these questions. If we can utilize the electoral process or the political process to advance those struggles, we should. We should be prepared to do that in the best way possible. But most of the work that we're going to be struggling around has nothing to do with running our candidate, nothing to do with necessarily City Hall, but everything to do with building power. And I don't know how we can get around that if we want to fix the real problems. We have to give people power, especially around African people's issues, locally, nationally, and internationally.
Okay. Well, Brandon, your opinion?
Yes. Yeah, and in my opinion, to that as well.
Okay.
There has to be a social awakening, but also a raising of political consciousness in and out of the realms of electoral politics. And often that's not a sexy topic or an attractive topic for many to really conceive, but how that looks in the frame of a question is being able to understand that how do you live in one of the most developed nations in this on this planet, one of them, but somehow a place like Cuba, another place far off, are more better prepared for natural disasters, but yet they're modes of life or development is not as advanced as where you are? Or how is it that a place that you stand today, you're able to enjoy the luxuries and the lacks of technology and all kinds of social revolutions that produces life enhancements to your everyday accruement? But in other places as well, they have the basic understanding, they have a higher reading literacy, they're in tune, they understand that humans, they understand that people, that life has value, and it isn't just measured in certain formulas of dollars or who you vote for, but they know what oppression is and what, you know, and what exactly benevolence is supposed to be versus malevolent forces. So with that, when we're speaking about the politics in and out and exactly what is a cohesive balance. And we want to speak from an African, pro-African, pro-Black, at least working class perspective from what I've been orientated to. I think realistically we have to look at how do we begin to rebuild family structures to recreate new men and new women that are proud and proud and prideful of knowing exactly that we have a mission ahead of us. It's not going to be an easy one, but it's a protracted struggle where we uplifting one another in love and peace and also being, you know, enjoyed for the betterment of our people outside of knowing that we have that responsibility too to represent ourselves on a governmental stage as well as economically, as well as socially, spiritually, and other facets of social life. So I believe that for us to reach this level, we know we need a cultural transformation, but it also starts with the way we see ourselves and reframing the way we are being put into positions and places that we know is not sustainable for any human being to be in.
I want to thank both of you brothers for being with us this evening. I'll be looking forward to getting your assessment and update on the political conference that you're having next week. And I'll put your number in my Rolodex so we can kind of communicate with one another.
Absolutely. And thank you, brother, for having us.
Thank you. Yes, brother. Thank you for having us on. And I want to thank all the people who called in and added their comments and suggestions. Because that's how we move forward. We have to be used to talking to each other about politics. And even where we don't have all alignment, talking to each other is the solution, right, to move forward. Because we got to learn how to make our politics work for us as opposed to other people.
Thank you. Thank you, brothers, for being with us.
Thank you.
We'll talk soon.
Shut the door. Move, Jude.
Richard.
Yes, sir.
Interesting conversation with our guests. It's work going on across this country, man. And our people realize the voids and the needs that need to be met, and they're doing it. We've been showcasing a lot of these brothers and sisters. Mm. So it's things out there that we can do as a people. I know that when people listen to Black Talk Radio or talk programs, they like to hear the conversations. They like to hear talk. And some people like to hear a lot of disagreements on the air. You know, they get off on that. But when it comes down to it, these problems that we face are real. And we need people that's going to be active and come up with ideas and solutions to help our people move forward. It's similar to that analogy that Cynthia McKinney did on our program that I play in that the collage of clips. We can't afford at this day and age to have dozens of our people just standing there being bystanders.
Right.
They need to be involved somehow. Whether you're active in the front like these two brothers, Brother Brandon and Brother Anamdi, or whether you're active in the back, either helping them organize, making flyers, making phone calls, giving a couple of dollars. It's ways that we can all be involved. Everybody doesn't have to be out front. Everybody's not a public speaker. Everybody's not an organizer, Richard. That's a talent.
Right.
But everybody can do something. And that's what we got to find our niche. We got to find out what we're interested in and what's going to move our people forward and get involved somehow. We no longer can afford to sit on the side and complain about oh, these white supremacists, oh, Trump, oh, this, oh, that. You know, I don't care about this foolishness. Oh, we want to get him out. Oh, we want to impeach him. Oh, the Democrats. Now you see all this field of Democrats, our people lining up behind Biden and all these others. Come on here. Well, put it this way. A percentage of our people are lining up behind these people. And you're going to get the same thing you've been getting.
Well, it's definitely the formation where we've been hosting and communicating and learning from is a segment of the population that, you know, is looking out for a different greater good than even what's enunciated that the traditional parties are supposed to, because we obviously see that they're not. But it also is looking at, you know, a future that we're building, you know. So I'm glad to see, because, you know, one thing I'm noticing, Elliot, is that, as the brother Namdi said, you know, there's an interconnectedness, a party in Pennsylvania, a party in Maryland, a party, and they're all interconnecting. So we're not talking about, even though they have different names, and they, as he said, they're learning from each other, we're learning from each other, mm-hmm. and to govern ourselves, you know, we're putting in place in this learning, in this learning process, how do we go about in this kind of environment to govern ourselves? Now, it don't have to be everyone at first. It just has to be us. And we're given examples of how we're going through that process of governing ourselves. And this communication outlet gives us the ability to exchange ideas, to build off experiences, to network with each other, right? So that we can be able to govern ourselves in order to have the quality of life that we recognize that we're entitled to just for being alive. It's not something that, you know, we should be working for. We should have a certain quality of life just to be alive because we have the creative ability to do that, to create that reality. And that's what's happening. And I think that's a great thing, not just a good thing. That's a great thing, you know. So I'm excited, you know, Elliot, to see what's these formations that's going on.
Yeah, and if you look at, you know, being a part of their conference, Brother Khalid Rahim, who has a political party here in Pennsylvania, that we had with us a couple of months ago, is going to be there speaking. Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report, who is part of our media, both mm-hmm. print and electronic, you know, all of them are playing a part in this. Hopefully we're playing a part in this as part of Black media to let people know about what's going on centered around some political formations that we're doing. We can be like some of those shows on terrestrial radio and some people that call themselves the number one civil rights leader that goes on there talking about the Democratic Party and touting all these Democratic candidates. You know, that's not serving us. It never served us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if anybody's seen that documentary, well, you know, being a student of history yourself, Richard, if anybody that's not familiar seen that documentary on the Reconstruction, they'll see that this man never had any type of inkling to deal fairly with our people. And when he seen that what our people were going to use this political process for, he made sure that he pulled the rug out from under us.
Yes, he did.
And rewrote some of those. You heard him say that it's difficult. It was very restrictive in Maryland to get involved in politics.
Right.
A lot of that language was written up after Reconstruction. But because they seen when Black people got involved politically and start operating in their own interests. I'm talking about after Reconstruction. I ain't talking about these clowns that we see now over the past 40, 50 years. But when some of our ancestors got involved early in their political formations, they were working towards the interests of Black folks, trying to secure land, trying to secure businesses, trying to secure banks. And they said, oh, well, we can't have this. Both Democrats and Republicans in this country made sure they overturned that card.
And you know, as you said that, you know, I think another doc that follows up, which is older, that people should look at that shows what that how severe that backlash was the rise and fall of Jim Crow, because you know, it just shows the tenacity of ordinary white people and the power elite, what they would do to us just do to prevent us to do what was done after, you know, once the after Reconstruction, mm-hmm. during Reconstruction.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I mean, we you know, and what's going on now, you know, is no different. When they're talking about when we're talking using the term gentrification, they were talking about giving the land back. I mean, it's, they have no new process.
Yeah.
But we have to be more tenacious and in our defensive mechanism in relationship to not allowing them prevent our growth and development. because, as you said, these people, one day out of slavery in 20 years was able to amass the amount of wealth over land that they had to do a whole lot of slick things to get that
to
back.
Get it back. Exactly. All the farmland that we had amassed, the number of black farmers that we were in control of, a lot of land in that black belt, and in control of the food supply. See, that was dangerous to white folks, that having black folks in control of any measured amount of this food supply. And they were.
Right. Creating those towns. And this is, I mean, when people say government involved, it makes it nebulous, because these were individuals who were looking out for their self-interest. Right. Using the tools of the legal system. And that's, as you say, my brother was saying, how difficult it is in Maryland to put a party together, because they don't want no competition. They don't want no opposition.
Exactly.
You know, they don't want no organizing. And so when you raise the question about, you know, that's our challenge. How do we speak to our young people, you know, younger, to not be to be holistic in the sense of where you are? We have to be able to find out if some of them weeds is medicine and some of them trees can be shelter. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, two things I want to mention before we leave, Richard, and something brief. I know you've seen the news that they put out across the print media and on Facebook about the Minister Farrakhan being banned.
Yes.
From Facebook. And they threw some others in there, some whites, I guess, just to kind of for effect, because their messages won't be banned from any social media. But, see, this man think he's pulling the rug out from under black people. But see, we have other things that we can do. Number one, and I was talking to the brother Ralph, and he mentioned that, you know, all black folks have to do is subscribe to the Final Call. They can hear all the messages from Minister Farrakhan. It's black social media outlets out there. The Black Talk Radio Network, Scotty Reed has one, BTR Community, right. BB Toomey has a large one growing. It's black right. social media outlets out there that, thank goodness, we are part of. We utilize that Facebook as a tool, but it's also other black social media outlets out there that Minister Farrakhan's message can be still put on. So this man is not cutting the legs out. I guess for people that don't understand what's going on, he's cutting the legs out. But that just should drive our people to start doing more with their own.
Right. And I'm hearing that discussion, too, at least in some broadcasts and individuals who are, you know, raising that, you know, recognizing a contradiction and trying to discover, you know, where they should go. And are familiar with, you know, there's other elements, but they're not familiar with, you know, or they didn't mention things that you just mentioned as far as alternative, but it does provide us to look, to separate, right? It's forcing us, but it also is showing us, you know, who feels that they can't, you know, one, it may, you know, I finally agree with y'all who say, they just have lack of information. And that's on us to provide the information that these are the alternatives.
Yeah.
And they can work. And they can be built. And those who don't want to use that, then that means they're not really looking out for the best interests of black people.
Yeah, so, I mean, we got an opportunity. I think I put out that information a couple of weeks ago, and I know Scotty did. In fact, when we had Scotty on.
Right.
To talk about that company out of India that did the assessment of black right. Streaming radio sites and podcasting sites, and Black Talk Radio Network was number one in the world. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that we can utilize, that's a tool that can be utilized.
Yes, yes.
And I want to mention two new programs are starting on Time for Awakening. If not, in fact, they'll be starting this week. Brother Franklin Jones, you know, I'm not sure of the title of his program, but he'll be doing a program that's coming on after African Perspectives with Brother Oshie on Mondays and Wednesdays. He'll be following Brother Oshie's program. His program, I think he calls it the Black Matrix. I think that's the title. But Brother Franklin Jones will be doing a program. And also Warren Ballantyne, who's a veteran broadcaster, was on Radio 1 for a number of years, was on Empowerment Radio. I remember when I left Terrestrial Radio, myself and the brother that was with me at the time, Brother Reggie, left Terrestrial Radio. We were contacted by Dave Anderson, who had Empowerment Radio at the time, and Scotty Reed, and we decided to go with Black Talk Radio Network. But since then, I don't know what happened to Empowerment. They seem to have went under or disbanded. I hope I'm wrong, because he had Bev Smith, he had Rob Redding, he had Warren Ballantyne, he had some known broadcasters on his network at the time. Well, Warren Ballantyne will be joining Time for Awakening. His podcast will be like a night talk session on Time for Awakening, and we'll be doing that Mondays, Wednesdays, every day during the week, 5 days a week. And it'll probably be on from 10 to 12, like a night talk with Warren Ballantyne. He has a little monicum, the champ is here, so his program will be joining the Time for Awakening family, and we're happy to have him. But those are the things we have to do, Richard. Is start networking with one another. If you're out on these so-called white conglomerates, come over to a black one. Help build that up. I give the brother credit, and we're happy to have him on Time for Awakening with his program. So he'll be on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Friday on Time for Awakening, like a night talk broadcast, probably around 10 o'clock, 10 to 12, something like that. We'll work out the time schedule, but his program will be either debuting this week, or I know for sure by next Monday. But Brother Franklin Jones' program will be debuting this week. So, you know, things are growing, and we always need people to get involved, to give 10 cents, a dollar, whatever they can. Just log on to timeforawakening.com. You can always donate any amount you want to help us stay on and to help us build, because we want to have more programs like this to give out information. Yeah, so, Richard, I guess we start winding things down, man. You know, I didn't get a chance to talk with you about some of the things going on. I know that Brother Omawali sent out a message that Dr. Asante was having a discussion up there today, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yes.
I wish I could have live streamed that. That seemed like it was going to be an interesting discussion. But we'll get some details from Brother Omawali on what happened. I did talk with Brother Obi Igbona, and he's coming. Brother Omawali is bringing him here, Richard, on the 20th of May.
Oh, okay.
I think they're going to be doing something around African Independence Day with the young people of his theater company, I think. But I'll find out a little bit more about that, because I did see a notice that Brother Omawali had sent out. I know you got it as far as the release of some of the upcoming events.
Right, right.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. And I'm kind of glad that, you know, we help facilitate a lot of those things, you know, relationships and all. That's what it's about, Richard.
Right. I was at a session with Afrocentricity International yesterday, Brother Omawali, and dealing with the discussion around Pan Africanism, and this, he's built up they have built up a study process of 24 people now, and it's growing, just exploring. How to, and looking at, the UNIA and the ACL, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, and African Communities League, looking at the pros and cons of the ideological development and the organizational development, just to provide insight on how they, and I say they, you know, will need to build and the connection. So
it's 24 people involved so far. Excuse me? It's 24 people so far involved.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know, and, you know, people attend, you know, the study, and it has its rigor, Elliot, cause you know, you gotta do readings, you gotta do quizzes, you know, and dealing with the technology, you know, and I had to, you know, like, look, y'all, y'all moving a little too fast for me, but it's a learning process. So it's good. It's great. Sister Lavidia from the Peace Park in North Philadelphia, in Philadelphia, was a part of it. So the networking.
And Brother Quadro of Abibi is part of it too. Yeah, he was telling me that.
So it's you know, the as you say, I mean, just as we were talking about the political, those who have political party formations and the networking that is occurring, these at the organizational level, the networks that are occurring, the relationships. And I think, brother, you know, I mentioned about it's about creating relationships, you know, and as the relationships get crystallized with each other, it goes down to where it'll actually get into blocks, communities, blocks, neighborhood blocks, and into people's homes. And building from the bottom up, as far as the sister said, assisting and servicing each other, our needs, you know. But it does take time, and we shouldn't be looking at it as something that's just going to be an immediate quick fix. You know, we should have a vision of 150 years, 100 years, 50 years, 25 years, 10 years. You know, one generation, two generations, three generations. We don't have to have it done in our lifetime. We have to, our African liberation has to be done. That's the goal. That's the mission. That's the project for it to be done. Not necessarily when, but we know what's going to be done. And when we have that, each generation, each organizer, each person will define for themselves when it will be done, and it shall.
Well, listen, you know, I agree with everything that you just stated, so we might as well just kind of wind things down. Make sure you tune into African Perspective with Brother Oshie from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. He'll be here tomorrow with African Perspectives, always interesting conversation with Brother Oshie on the program. After that will be the new program debuting with Brother Franklin Jones, The Black Matrix, from 1 to 3 after Brother Oshie's program. From 6 to 8, I'm sorry, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. I think he's got Nori Muhammad on there tomorrow as his guest. They'll be talking about the banning of Minister Farrakhan from Facebook and some of the things that they're going to be addressing. It should be an interesting conversation on Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. After that, Let's Buy Black365.com, the podcast, 8 to 9 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers should be airing from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Sister POC and Revive from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Thursday, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. And then Time for an Awakening is back on Friday from 8 to 10. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing,
know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children.
To save the children.